Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello there, and welcome to episode 25 of the AI Comic Pod. You are being guided through the wonderful world of The Walking Dead seasons 4 to 6 by your favourite dynamic duo. I am, of course, Stu, and with me is Rory. How's it going?
Very well, mate. It's nice to be back finally.
It is. It's been a month for one reason or another. We just keep making people wait because we're horrible like that. Now, Rory is, of course, the Robin to my Batman, so that makes our guest this evening Batgirl, and that would be the lovely Marco Lopez. How's it going, Mr. Lopez?
What the
I was going to go Alfred. I was going to go Alfred then, but it didn't work.
No, Batgirl's way funnier.
How exactly am I supposed to respond to that? Actually, wait. Okay, hold on. I've got a better idea. Okay. You can be Rick Grimes. Rory can be Carl Grimes.
And I'll be Carol.
Hold on a second. Carol's a badass. And I'll be Carol because, like, she is. If you're going to make me a girl, at least make me Carol, because then Carol's like a proper badass. She, like, tears things up.
She is a badass.
I also like the fact where Rory's Carl.
You are Rick, though. You are Rick. Rick is. Oh, he's so irritating, Rick. Let's be honest.
Yeah, but so am I. I'm really fucking annoying. I have heard me talk. I have been around me for 35 years. I'm well aware of this.
That's probably the most honest thing you've ever said on this podcast.
Rory, the alternative is you could be Michonne, but I think that'd be weird.
Yeah.
It would be a bit weird.
Because then we've had coital exploits.
Right, there we go.
Yeah. Right. Do you know what?
Save it for the AI Christmas
move past day. This.
Yeah. Moving swiftly on away from me and Rory and awkward coitus. On. We're going to jump straight into the classic, near infamous AI Comic Pod quiz, because Marco hasn't actually had one.
He's not. So because I get this wrong. So is this your fourth or third, fourth pod with us?
One Walking Dead, one Batman vs. Superman, one Suicide Squad. Yeah, this is number four. You see how much I care about you guys? I even remember.
Actually, isn't there was a two Batman versus? Were you on the preview as well?
Yes, he was.
So was on the preview?
Yeah, you were on the preview as well, because we always try and get people on the review that are on the preview.
I don't know if he was. I can't even remember.
I don't think I was. But I'll take your word for it.
Okay, whatever. We can look it up. Anyway, so you've been on a few shows without having a quiz, which is scandalous. You know, it's unheard of, really. So we're going to go straight into it. Just a disclaimer, because Marco's already been crying like a little whiny girl about this.
Like
there are a lot of episodes. There's a lot of material. It's difficult when you're talking a TV series quiz. We've mentioned that in the past. So, you know, We'll take his answers with a pinch of salt.
Yeah.
Question one. Who is Garrus talking to when he says, "If it makes you feel any better, you taste much better than we thought you would"?
Bob Stookey.
Oh, you got the surname as well?
Got the surname.
You still only get 1 point. Because the
only one point.
The answer that we were accepting was Bob. Just gone.
Just Bob. All right. What is the name of Eastman's goat?
Tabitha?
Oh.
It is.
Congratulations, yeah. You've already beaten Gags.
Yay! That was the main aim, really.
You are now leveling
up. Right, question three. What drink does Daryl refuse to let Beth have as her first taste of alcohol?
Some nasty peach schnapps.
See, I told you you'd ace this. Don't start again. Three. I knew you would. You've literally now watched all of this and read all these comics.
Gag's second appearance, and you're now level with Kalon and with Rory and Joe.
God, should I make this extremely hard now? Right?
Yeah, go to the backup questions. The ones filed under B for bastard.
I haven't got B for bastard. He's going to get all of these now. These get quite easy.
Yeah.
Which country does Dr. Jenner claim may have a cure?
France.
It is.
Four for four.
That was a bit of a gift, admittedly.
Question five. What is the name of Herschel's horse?
Shit. It's not Patton. Nah, can't remember.
Oh, I thought you were going to get that.
I saw you were going to get it as well. It was Nelly or Nervous Nelly.
I remember that now, but too late.
Four is your score, but we will give you the bonus and just see how you fare. This is quite a tricky one. How many severed heads does the governor keep in his tanks? Like his fish tanks?
Wild guess, 13.
It's 24. But yeah, I tell you, bonuses are tough. I think only... Is Zach out in six for six?
Zach is still the only person to get top marks.
Yeah, but four is stellar.
Four is level with me and Chris.
I'm pleased.
That's good. Respectable gentleman's score.
It's a very good score. It's a very good score.
If it's any consolation, I would have got 1 out of 5 because I could only remember that it was Bob that he was talking to. The rest of them were straight over my head.
I think I took these off the quizzes online and various places, but I think I got three, but I struggled with the goat and the horse name as well. Didn't come to mind straight away. So
yeah,
right. That's sort of way back in season two. So yeah, we're going way back for that one. So yeah, tough.
It's been on a lot longer than you think it has, hasn't it?
Yeah, when did it air first? Is it 2012 or
2009?
Shit, really?
Yeah, because it's 1 year, isn't it?
No, of course it is. And Jesus Christ, that's a long time back.
We're coming on for its seventh year, aren't we now? It's crazy. It feels like it's been going for about, 3 years or something? But you forget,
I suppose when you look at my split persona in Carl, he was a kid, wasn't he, back in the day?
Yeah.
So. Yep.
And exactly. everyone's aged a lot. I mean, you look at... Well, I'll mind you know, most of the other kids are dead. Yeah, I was thinking about two of the kids that we're going to mention here, but yeah, they're dead now, so never mind.
Never mind. Most of them, if in doubt, they've died.
Yeah,
it's usually the Walking Dead. If they weren't a particular favourite, they've probably copped it at one stage.
It's the Game of Thrones approach, isn't it? If you're not sure if anyone's alive, they're probably dead.
It's pretty true, man. If you've not seen someone for a season, generally speaking, they're dead. It's not necessarily the case in Game of Thrones. They can come back after.
Well, yeah, because you've got Gendry off in a rowboat for like 3 years or something. Then he's going to come back. Yeah,
Rickon came back after being away for at least two seasons, for about 10 minutes.
Oh, well, this can morph into me next on the box Game of Thrones. Possibly. Nice. Don't have to plan that.
Nice.
There we go.
Right, let's actually get started. Stu's got mild agenda for us, so we can get going.
Yeah, it's very mild. It's like a sort of a corma. It's like a chicken corma, sort of mild. Really, no heat to it whatsoever. Just thought it'd be a good idea, because season four was a good few years ago, to just have a quick recap as to what's happened, because I actually had to have a refresher today. I would love to have gone back and watched the six seasons, but it's just physically impossible when you watch as much TV as I do to fit in six whole seasons. So at the end of season three, there was all the shit that kicked off at Woodbury, wasn't there? So start of season four, the survivors from Woodbury after the fall of the governor, have all been brought into the prison. Rick started losing his marbles a little bit, so he sort of stepped down as leader of the group, and they're trying to be a little bit more autonomous. And the major thing that's happening to the rest of the group is the flu has broken out, or there's some kind of a flu-like virus going round. And everyone, of course, that is getting sick is then dying and reanimating. So they start having to segregate everyone that's ill into a separate wing. And shock horror, Glenn gets ill. So everyone starts getting worried, because over the first couple of seasons, Glenn was a bit of a prick, wasn't he? Wasn't that great. And then just as he starts getting really badass and really hardcore, you think that he's going to be one of the ones that snuffs it. You've then got the doctor who actually does die, which is a bit harsh. Then the governor has reappeared and he's changed his name, and he gets sort of adopted by Tara and her sister Lily. And they're really struggling, aren't they? They're living out in the wild and they're not doing great. And the governor's got a lot more street smarts, and he manages to weasel his way in and convince them that he's not an absolute bastard. He helps them out and he helps them survive and he shows them where they're going wrong. But eventually they stumble onto a camp run by Martinez, who used to be his deputy. And of course the governor can't suppress the inner psycho for too long. So he kills Martinez, he kills his lieutenants, takes over the camp. But in doing so, Lily's daughter, Megan, who the governor has sort of, he's taken a bit of a shine into because it reminds him of his own daughter, apart from the fact that she's not dead, then gets killed by one of the walkers. The governor, or going back, I forget what his bloody name he starts calling himself, he takes all the ammunition from this new camp, including a fucking tank, and he goes to the prison, doesn't he? And he's determined that he's going to kick them out. Rick tries and begs and pleads with him. Now, I watched this scene before, and it's one of my favourite scenes of this season, where he's pleading with him, saying, everyone who's alive now can stay alive. Nobody else has to die. You know, we've gone through so much. Why can't we just let it be? And then Lily walks in carrying her daughter's body, and as soon as the governor sees that, he just loses his shit. In the meantime, they've caught Herschel and Michonne, and he's holding them captive. And as Rick finishes this wonderful speech, Herschel's got a really big smile on his face, and he thinks that he's convinced the governor. And then I think his exact words are, he says something like, liar. And then he pulls back Michonne's sword, and of course he beheads Herschel. Beth and Maggie have to watch their dad die, and then all shit breaks loose. The prison, the walls get broken down. The walkers overrun the place, and the whole of Rick's group gets splintered. They all run off in separate directions. And the final thing of the season, obviously we're only doing a quick overview, we will delve into it. The group all starts arriving, starts seeing signs for Terminus, and they all sort of start thinking, well, hang on, that the logical thing for the others to do is they'll all go there as well. But when they arrive there, it looks really nice. But then Rick spots that some of the people are using some of Glenn and Maggie's possessions. And so they realise that something's not quite right. But just before they went in, Rick has a bit of a light bulb moment, and he leaves a stash of weapons outside the grounds because he just senses that it's a little bit too good to be true. But then they get caught, they get cornered, they get thrown into one of the rail cars. And of course, who's in there? Glenn, Maggie, Sasha, Bob, Abraham, Eugene, Rosita. So they're all finally reunited, but just as they're about to fucking die. So quick 5-minute recap. That was quick.
That was quick. That's the most you've ever spoken without stopping. That's quite impressive for you.
Well, with some creative editing, you can put me wheezing if you want in there, or coughing. I don't know. Depends who's editing.
It'd be Nina, the lovely Nina. Thank you.
Thanks, Nina.
So yeah, that's it. It was a great. It was a mixed season, wasn't it? Let's be honest.
I thought it was pretty consistent. I think the seasons.
Few episodes were the ones that dragged a little bit, and then it picked up as it tends to do.
It generally does, though, doesn't it? They generally start. One thing I noted down was at the end of the season, it seems like they've almost for a couple of seasons they stumble onto a formula. Of something happens, there's this big hardship, but then they find their way to somewhere and it looks okay, and then shit goes down. So first it's the
I think that's what people have issues with a little bit at times with it, because it very much is a similar played out story.
Because they had the prison and they had
the prison was the same, discovering the prison right at the end and then
Terminus.
So, exactly.
So three seasons on the run, you've got, oh no, everything's horrible, but oh look, there's a place we can go to. I hope everything's okay. Wah, wah.
And that's it, man. I think that's why people have started to, I think they needed, you know, we're going to come on to it and stuff, but I think they needed something to change in that kind of repeated approach. Because I think up until this point, and people debate season two, and I can't really remember what we said about the farm in season two, because it's going way back. But the first three seasons... Yeah, I think so. I think the first three seasons play out extremely well, and then maybe the writers start to struggle a little bit. You know, it did feel a little bit of a repeat of what gone before. You know, especially with the governor for me in this series.
Yeah. Okay, Marco. I think you should probably school us now. I've got me pen and pencil ready. Okay.
All right. Well. I think a few important things about season four to understand is there's a lot of controversy behind the season because, first of all, for all intents and purposes, the finale of season three, a lot of people see as a cop out because if you look at particularly if you look at the source material, and again, it's not to say that the TV show has to be the same as the source material, but, there's a lot that was left to be desired in respect of the ending of season three. And the big controversy is that the prison set cost a lot of money. AMC wanted it milked. So that's why you saw it milked, for at least another good six episodes in season four. Now, I'm not saying the flu arc was a stupid one. In fact, I think it was quite an interesting one given the situation, because I think, you know, an outbreak of anything would be quite a difficult thing to handle in a zombie apocalypse. But
and it's
realistic
as well, isn't it? Because if you've got many people living in such close quarters, these things are going to happen. So it's far more realistic than, look, we've been living together for months and nobody's ever got sick.
Totally agree. I think the issue once again is pacing, because I think the challenge strategically with the season for me is just how quickly certain things moved. I guess, you know, you can sort of look at that controversy. However, for what it did, those five episodes in particular that opened up, they did a lot of important things with people like Herschel. Herschel's character came out really well. There's a lovely monologue I think he gives in episode three, where he sort of talks a lot about to Rick and Maggie about, you know, choosing what to risk your life for, because fundamentally you're risking your life everywhere, and that was quite a powerful sort of monologue which defined a lot of where Herschel had ended up. But also little things that they did. One of the things that I love about season four is what they did with the arc with the kids, Lizzie and Mika. Now, spoiler for those who look, just quickly.
If you've not seen it by now, Jesus Christ, you're never going to watch it.
Just quickly, can I spoil the comics or not really?
Yeah, fuck it.
Okay. All right. So let's put it this. I'll be gentle.
It's a little boy, isn't it, in the comics?
What the TV show did with this particular tangent of you know, the kids and the fact that Lizzie is clearly just not on the same page with everybody about the zombies, the TV show does magnificently. It's almost obscure in the comics. It just suddenly happens. There's an important arc that they use the incident in the comics to develop the character who does in fact kill the child who eventually is obviously not seeing the zombies the right way. But the point is, the way that they built us up with Lizzie is remarkable. And the thing is, those five episodes leave a lot of hints around, you know, what's obviously upcoming, and there's some wonderful stuff that they do there. I also love the way that they give little hints around the growing relationship between Michonne and Carl, which is something you especially start to appreciate as the guys arrive into Alexandria in season five as well. So that's good. But I think also the big thing is what the season does with Carol is so awesome. Yeah. It's really powerful. When you consider that by now, Carol is dead in the comics and she dies a very pointless death in the comics. Carol on the TV show is freaking amazing. And it's a testament to how well the characters sort of lasted. a couple of other things with season four. There's obviously the two episodes, Live Bait, Dead Weight, which is episode 6 and 7, where they obviously go into the governor's backstory. There's a positive here and a negative here, I feel. The negative for me is it feels like those two episodes just suddenly come out of the water to just sort of slow things down. And I think what might have made better sense sort of as they were planning out the episodes is to almost have pieces of that interspersed through the previous five, just so you start seeing pieces of this governor story coinciding and you know, everything sort of slowly builds to the same point, if that makes sense. Because ultimately, I don't know if people were that invested in that story. Because what they basically did, yes, I'm about to confess just how much of a Walking Dead geek I am, but I've actually read the Rise of the Governor novel, which is a whole backstory behind the governor in comic terms. So, little known fact for those who haven't read it, Philip Blake is not the governor's real name. But Philip Blake is a real person. That's the only hint I'll give you. And what they do is they explore a lot of the journey that the governor takes in that novel, and they put it in these two episodes. And the way they pay homage to it and respect to it is actually very, very cool. But I think the challenge is these two episodes feel a little bit not pointless, but almost a bit like filler instead of actually being critical to the story. Too Far Gone, the mid-season finale where obviously all hell breaks loose, is magnificent. The way that there's lots of iconic imagery, the governor on the tank, the hostages kneeling down, the character that gets decapitated in the comic book, there's a lot of similar images, and I think the good thing is by the time Herschel gets the blade, you're invested in him. Yeah. And that's important because I really, there was a concern for me that because the character who got the blade in the comic book hadn't really been well introduced yet in the TV show, I thought people weren't going to be invested because by that point, you're kind of like feeling it's got to be someone you care about. And Herschel definitely everyone cared about. And then also that there's that really powerful image of when Rick and Carl are escaping and you see that image of the prison in disarray in the background, really, really powerfully sort of caught from the comic book. The back half of season four I like because there's some great moments, there's some great episodes. The ones where you sort of got that camaraderie being built slowly between Rick Michonne and Carl is really powerful. But then of course the high point is the two episodes. The one is The Grove. And it's funny because when The Grove showed up, obviously by the time the back half of season four started, you see all these groups, they're splintering up. And I'm pretty sure most people were thinking, okay, this is the boring group because you've got Tyrese, three kids, Carol, not really as interesting as, say, Daryl, because Daryl is Daryl. And then, Rick, self-explanatory. The others have Glenn, and then there's this big truck of a guy called Abraham. All these things are interesting. The Grove took such awesome themes. It there's a lot of Mice and Men references, if you guys have read that book. You might have studied it at school, I suppose.
Yeah, school, forced to read it at school, yeah.
Yeah, really powerful, all the stuff about the flowers, and just really, really, really brilliant episode. And and I'm really glad that they chose sort of Carol to sort of take up that arc, because I think when you look at Carol, especially from then and what she's turned into now in season six, it's an incredibly brilliantly crafted character arc, and it just shows that even though the guys make some mistakes, I've got big gripes with Tyrese, as I'll talk about later, they can get it right. They really can get it right with certain characters. The other episode I think is a high point is the last one, it ends on a genuine cliffhanger. It's really tense. There's a lot of intelligent stuff that Rick and Daryl and Michonne and Carl do. The way that episode opens, people forget, is quite a really significant savage moment, because obviously Rick is taking a chunk out of Joe's neck to save his kid, but it's a very powerful moment that's also referenced in the comics about what it would take or what lengths you're willing to go to save someone. And the funny thing is throughout Rick's evolution, right up until sort of patches of season six, I'm just constantly hearkening back to, Rick versus the governor. Just how different are they? And it's only when you finally meet a certain character, which you're soon going to discover I'm going to rave about massively, that you suddenly realize just, number one, Rick and the Governor may not be so different, but number two, they are peaches and cream compared to the guy they're about to face. Mm. That season four ending is just absolutely really magic. The one last thing I want to say is also just the introduction of Abraham Eugene and Rosita. I love Abraham. I love Michael Cudlitz has nailed it. Abraham is a one man wrecking crew in the comic. He's a one man wrecking crew in the TV show, and he comes across so well in the TV show. He's really well cast.
Yeah, you mentioned that was something I actually forgot. You mentioned when Rick bites Joe's throat and rips it out, because that's a really horrible scene, because the Claimers have been around for a couple of episodes, haven't they? They've stumbled upon Daryl, and Daryl's kind of hidden in plain sight. He doesn't really want to join them, but he knows that if he tries to escape or tells him he's not interested, they'll just shoot him on the spot. And then what really pushes Rick over the edge is when it looks like they're actually about to rape Carl. He looks kind of hopeless, doesn't he? But then he sees the fear in Carl's eyes, and he's got nothing else he can do. The only weapon he's got is his teeth. And then he bites his throat, doesn't he? And then the guy that's threatening Carl, he rips his windpipe out, doesn't he?
It's a really, really, very savage attack. But the thing is, this is the thing. You ask these questions. What would you do? And in that situation, I don't know. But hell, you know, someone threatens my kid. I'm not saying I'd be that savage, but hell.
That's why I like Rick. For all the problems that he has, he's one of the more believable characters. Yes, he's an arsehole. Yes, he becomes an egomaniac. Yes, he has, you know, nervous breakdowns on a bi-weekly basis. But at the end of the day, there are millions of people across the world who in that same situation would do exactly the thing, because when your survival instinct kicks in, there is nothing that you wouldn't do to protect yourself, and certainly to protect your kid as well.
Yeah.
I think with Shane gone at this stage, and Carol probably not quite developed like they'd hoped. Well, not that they'd hoped, but they'd planned to do. I think Rick was carrying the show necessarily, and I think, you know, it's clever in that sense, because, you know, you can feel the burden you know, on his shoulders, and that's what happens in the start of season four. He's struggling to adapt to, you know, life after Laurie, even though they had so many problems, and tries to become a pig farmer, if I don't remember rightly. He wants to have a settled life, and the prison is the kind of, he's always looking for sanctuary. That's the thing with Rick. He's always looking for a safe place, you know, for his kids.
And you can understand it, can't you? Because at some point you must just get exhausted and think it'd be nice to not run. It'd be nice to sit down and enjoy life. But in doing so, the group becomes a little bit soft, don't they? They get a little bit too complacent. And
was it four or five where they kind of almost start to starve? I think it was five, wasn't it?
Five.
So, you know, we'll obviously go on to that very shortly. But yeah, you do. It's not an easy life on the road. I mean, it's constant danger. You know, they're always looking for some form of stability, and they almost have it. You know, the prison was, in theory, you know, made a great place to.
It was the perfect settlement, wasn't it?
Because it
was fortified. It had even inside. They had safety. They had grounds that they could grow stuff on. They had lookout towers. They had vehicles. They built the battlements outside with the jagged sticks. But it raises the question, like Marco said so many times in the show, it makes you think, well, what if you were in that situation? Would you ever really be able to put your feet up and think, we're okay now? Because as the show has shown, there's always another faction around the corner that wants your stuff. There's always another group that are willing to be the cold-blooded killers that maybe you tried to not be. So can you ever stop? Can you ever really settle down? Or is the best thing to do to just keep on moving?
I mean, season three obviously showed it, but season four as well, it's more about, you know, the dangers from, well, this was obviously about illness, you know, as well as...
It's the danger within, you know, isn't it, as much as anything?
Yeah, but it's the dangers of obviously other humans rather than necessarily the walkers. I think people's issue sometimes with it is that you know, the walkers weren't as big a threat as they actually are. Do you know what I mean? I suppose they adapted and got used to them, but it's brought those elements back in, and obviously the human threat was the key with the governor. And yeah, the storyline, I thought Morrissey was great as a governor. I think, like Margot hinted at, he's nothing in comparison to what's to come.
Just before we move on, a quick one about key deaths.
Okay, go for it.
Very briefly, I'm just going to say it's one that Marco's already mentioned. Lizzie, Herschel. For me.
Oh, Lizzie. Okay.
Because of the way it's done, because you've got this kid. She seems like such a lovely, friendly, well-adjusted kid. But then you just start getting these little bits, don't you, where you're going, what? Why is she on the railway tracks? Why is she taunting the walker? And then it starts to... And she still thinks that they're alive, doesn't she? She thinks they're still in there, and she just doesn't understand that they're just these mindless, empty husks, that they don't have anything left. And that the way they do it, when it's look at the flowers, and you're going, she's not. She did.
It's very of mice and men. The scariest thing about that episode for me, and it's also the way they open the episode as well, is this image of Lizzie outside, like, playing with the walker as if it's...
Yeah.
Oh, man, it's a frightening...
I'll tell you what about the show, and people obviously, you know, it's a love show. I mean, it's a hugely popular show, always has been, but they do have, you know, for whatever reason, you talked about those filler episodes before, but they make the show their way. You know, the thing about the showrunners is that they make it, and they don't just take audience feelings and run with those ideas. They don't just make it, you know, walkers constantly, you know, they could make it constantly about action and constantly about fear and death and everything else, but obviously you have to introduce all the story arcs to keep you interested. And episodes like The Grove, it wouldn't last, but episodes like The Grove are just, that is like really high quality TV making. It's really high caliber, you know, script writing, just to just go off completely, you know, from the story as it would be, as it's progressing, and do something that bold, which, as Marco said, does exist in the comics, but nowhere near the same intensity they brought it to life in the television show.
A very quick point to support that is episode 12 still is one of my favorites as well, even though, like, a lot of people think, oh, you know, Beth, boring. But That episode when Beth and Daryl are sort of explored for a whole episode, it's interesting because of Daryl, because that episode is a lot more about Daryl than it is about Beth.
And it's the first time they properly fleshed him out, isn't it? All you've ever really heard about is the sort of redneck side of Daryl, that when he was with Merle, and you've never really delved into why he is the way he is, why he is such a hard ass, why he is so sheltered with a lot of people, and why he seems to be the perennial loner.
Exactly. I think Daryl, like Carol, and I wasn't meaning to rhyme, but those two, if you go back to what their original characters were like, are just so worlds apart of where they've taken them. And that's what Marco's right in saying before, that, you know, they have developed certain characters extremely well. I mean, you can talk about Rick's journey, and God, it's been a turbulent one, but, you know, Carol's journey is incredible as an actress, and, you know, she's really gone to levels that I didn't get the impression she could go to.
I hated her in the first season.
Yeah, you would. And Daryl just came off as a squirrel hunting redneck with a crossbow. Do you know what I mean? When his brother went missing, and it was that reaction to it, you didn't think this guy's ever going to be, you could think he'd maybe be loyal because he clearly has that in him, but he's obviously developed, and Glenn as well. And obviously, you know, Maggie and Herschel and everyone else was introduced a little bit later, but you know, there is key developments for all the kind of major characters, you know, it's pretty impressive really.
Yeah. I think that's a good note for us to wind up season four. We will be moving on to season five now. Couple of sort of talking points from that, if we think back to it. So we leave season four, and everyone has been captured now. Everyone's come back together, but they've all been captured in Terminus. And then it starts becoming apparent that in Terminus, they're not just going to be killed, they're going to be killed and eaten. And that's that's how the place has stayed. That's how the people have survived, is they lure everyone in with this wonderful promise of safety. And it looks so great, but
sanctuary.
Yeah, it is. It's built up as a sanctuary, as a haven for everyone in this horrible new world. But as soon as you arrive, we're going to take everything that we can from you, all your weapons, all your kit. Then we're going to kill you in the pretty gruesome way. We're going to bop you over the head with a baseball bat, slit your throat over what looks like an old pig feeding trough. And then we're going to eat you, boil you, turn you into people jerky, whatever it is. And there's a bit of a gross scene. You see the one guy, don't you, on the end, who I didn't realize, it's the Penguin from Gotham.
Is it?
Yeah. I was watching a video before doing a recap. He's in there. And also, there's a villain who's been in the new season of Gotham, and he is one of the wolves who we'll talk about later on. But I didn't realize it. There's a bit in season four, I think it is, where Rick, Carol, and Carl are in a small little town, and they run into two people, a boy and a girl.
Oh, yeah.
The guy gets lost, and they find the girl being eaten by walkers, and her legs come off. The guy turns up at Terminus, and he's the one that gets killed. And there's that awful sound when he gets hit, and you just hear off the top of his head. And it's, I think, Robin Lord Thomas or something like that. And it's the guy that plays the Penguin in Gotham.
Oh, there you go.
So there you go. And they manage to overpower them, don't they? And it's mainly aided by the lady that we were just talking about, Carol.
She's on a one woman rampage.
That's either my favourite Carol moment or my second favourite Carol moment, where she stood on the hill and she's just taken everything down, and she causes that massive explosion, doesn't she? Blowing up a fuel tank, and in amongst all the chaos, everyone's able to escape, and some of the group get killed, some of the Terminus people get killed, but Gareth leads a section of them away. They then sort of have their proper introduction with Eugene and Abraham and what have you, and they decide that the safest thing to do is they should all try and get Eugene to Washington, D.C., because there's a cure there. It then turns out that Eugene is a Billy Bullshitter. There is no cure, and he's only said it because he's realised that he offers absolutely nothing to anyone. So the only way you can stay alive is by pretending he's got useful information. We also get introduced to Father Gabriel Stokes, who I find to be incredibly annoying.
Possibly the most annoying character in modern television history.
Yeah, that's a fair shout. Because I don't believe that in this world he would have lived. I think he would have been Walker fodder years ago. Because I just don't believe that he doesn't. For a start, he's on his own.
He wouldn't have lasted a day. He wouldn't have lasted a day.
Probably not. Probably not. But he's on his own. He's got no nous. He's got no street smarts. He's got no cutting edge. And he seems to be an absolute puss. He's got no fighting ability. So how he's managed to not die of starvation, let alone having his face bitten off, is just beyond me. But you have a bit of a backstory with him, don't you, about he's questioned his faith, and he had a bit of a shithouse moment where loads of people wanted to come in his church and he just locked them outside and let them get eaten, which was kind of funny.
I love that that's a bit of a shithouse moment. Yeah. He's basically slaughtered, you know, tens or hundreds of people. It's just a shithouse moment.
Well, we'll get that as one of the t-shirts that Gags is going to make, # shithouse moment. I'm going to wear one of them. I'll get a black t-shirt that says shithouse moment. And then Rick tries to convince everyone. They want to stay at the church, don't they? But everyone gets a little bit split up, don't they? Because some of them really want to get Eugene over to where this cure is. So they split off, don't they?
Yeah.
Maggie and Glenn.
I think Maggie and Glenn go with, don't they?
They go with. And then Eugene sort of lets slip that he isn't a scientist. Abraham knocks him out with one punch, which is amazing. Because I didn't like Abraham at first. But then when he found out
Eugene,
think
he's great.
He was like, yeah, okay. It's his ginger beard. You can't trust anyone with a ginger beard. That's a life lesson. Did your parents not teach you that? Never trust anyone with ginger beards. Yeah. I've also skipped over a bit. There's Beth gets abducted, doesn't she? And Beth gets taken to the nearby hospital.
Oh, the weird hospital.
Yeah, this was a bit of a... I wasn't 100% convinced by this arc. This seemed like they'd gone... It was kind of like mini Woodbury.
Do you know what? If you've watched Fear the Walking... Have you watched Fear the Walking Dead?
Yes.
Are you up to date with it?
Yes.
Oh, you did? I didn't know you stuck with it. Okay, I've come round to it a little bit. I know. I don't know why I keep watching it, but I came round to it in the second half of the second season. It feels a bit like that in Beth's storyline. Those kind of characters and acting and style, it does feel a little bit Fear the Walking Dead. It's a bit different. It doesn't fit quite in place, I don't think.
No, it's a bit of a square peg in a round hole, isn't it? Like you say, it feels a little bit away. You've got, well, we're going to stay and fortify the church because we've got kids. Yeah, well, we're going to get this scientist over to DC. Yeah, but at the same time, there's like a couple of people are doing the hospital thing, but it makes it a little bit more compelling because of who those people are. Because you've got Daryl, because you've got Carol, who ends up in the hospital because she gets run over. And then you've got Noah, who I liked Noah. I thought Noah...
I liked him a lot.
He added something a little bit different. He seemed quite believable. He wasn't 100% settled. He was quite scatty for it. And because he's a young lad, isn't he? And the hospital's being run by Dawn.
Officer Dawn, yes.
It looks like at first, doesn't it, that the hospital's this really noble thing. But then it turns out that it's very much... It's almost like a fascist hospital. She's only willing to save people's lives as long as they buy into her regime. And her regime is, you will serve us, you will do what we say, and we will keep you reasonably safe.
Yeah, was good about it, good about the hostel, was it was in a city again. I thought that was quite nice to reintroduce, a city. Because I don't think we'd seen one since Atlanta.
Other than supply runs.
The supply rooms are often in town, aren't they? They're often, and I think with a big city, it felt good because I like the scale of things when they move to that kind of style.
And it makes it harder, doesn't it? Because you think when you're out in the fields, if you get set upon by a gang of walkers, you've got loads of places to go. But as we saw in the first episode, when you've got Rick and Glenn, they're running away from the walkers and they're going down little tiny alleyways and they know they've got to consider every move. Because one wrong turn and they've hit a brick wall or a fence or something.
Yeah.
And then you have the horrible, horrible moment right at the end. It looks like everything's being diffused. It looks like Rick's managed to, save the group. Beth's going to be coming out. Carol's going to be coming out. And then Dawn's gun goes off and she shoots Beth. And Beth stabs her. Sorry, no, Beth stabs Dawn.
Beth stabs her.
And then one of her lieutenants shoots Beth. And then Daryl shoots the lieutenant guy. But then that other woman steps up and she's sort of like, right, forget it. Let's just leave it. It was all down to her. So then even her people, even the police officers that she was with, they didn't fully buy into her plan. They were only doing it because it was either that or get kicked out onto the mean streets again. And again, I think that's quite realistic because, again, you would. If you're in a safe building and someone's telling you to just be a little bit of a dick and a bit horrible, but the alternative is fending for yourself, you probably would go along with it. Because as far as the villains go, she was a minor villain, wasn't she? She was by
very
minor. She wasn't governor standards, but she was still a villain. She wasn't the big bad. She was like a little bad at the back. And then there's the awful scene when the rest of the group is at the front of the hospital and you've got Maggie stood there, and then Rick walks out, and then I think one of the girls walks out, and then Daryl walks out carrying Beth, and Maggie drops to the floor. And because by that point, Maggie's on her own, isn't she? She's lost everyone else in her family because some of the family died on the farm. Then she loses her dad. So all she's got left in the world is Glenn.
It's a funny one, this, though. She was getting hated on Maggie because she basically forgot about Beth for half a season.
Yeah, that's one of the failings of the writing, I think.
Yeah, it was. Maggie needed to go off to Washington and leave Beth behind, and that was pretty fine.
She needed to acknowledge it a lot sooner.
So
we didn't mention Gareth, man. I think should we go back to talk on on the church.
I'm going to work lyrically about Gareth.
Yeah, he will. I figured you would. The only other thing really that happens towards the end, they stumble onto Alexandria, don't they? Again, it could be argued that it's the formulaic, the paint by numbers. It's another walled off community, but this one's got a bit of a twist. They aren't safe. Yes, they've got walls because Diana's husband has put these wonderful walls up, but the people inside are all green. They're all total rubes. They don't know how to survive in the outside world. And Diana actually asks them, doesn't she, to stay, because they're all hardened, chiseled. They've been surviving on the road for a long time. And she knows that they need that edge, because if anyone attacks them,
guns for hire, isn't it? Yeah.
Basically, yeah, they've come into town as mercenaries. And she knows that if anybody comes to them, they're fucked. They're cannon fodder, or wolf fodder, as it turns out. So yeah, by all means, tell you what then, Marco, you are obviously chomping at the bit to get back to Gareth. Take it away, because he's a brilliant character.
Yeah, he's really an evil good. Fucker, isn't he?
He's really good. And I mean, basically what happens is there's a storyline in the comics called Fear the Hunters, which is pretty much the remix that the TV show guys have done with the whole Terminus arc. But once again, kudos to the TV show guys, because they took what is a very – it's an interesting story in the comic book, but it's so much better delivered in the TV show. And No Sanctuary, the first episode of season 5, is easily one of my favorites. It's still got the record for viewership of any of the – Walking Dead episodes as well, and I mean it's just an absolutely jam-packed, action-packed, chilling episode. A lot of the savagery in that opening act with that trough is obviously quite frightening to people. But the funny thing is in the comic books you end up hating these guys a lot more, because what they don't bring across in the TV show is that these guys have resorted to even eating children, which is a horrible thought. But that's Gareth's whole tangent when he's saying to Bob about the whole story with the bear cubs and the bears. The bears can, and I mean that's sort of the thing. But that's it. Gareth is just, I mean, he's only in what 3-4 episodes, but he's very chilling, very conniving. And yet, at the same time, has this lovely charm. So it's quite effective that he takes you into confidence in the last episode of season 4, and then immediately turns on its head in the beginning of season 5. He's really, really good. But also that whole episode as well is quite interesting, just because again of what it represents for Carol in many respects. The rest of the season, look, the first half of season 5, I mean, I share your sentiments on Gabriel, although, funny enough, Father Gabriel's a lot more interesting in the TV show than he is in the comic books.
What?
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, God, how bad is he in the comics?
He's just not fleshed out in the same interesting detail. He's a lot more... He's given
what
a lot
interesting of... details, Mark?
Well, he's it'll come up later, particularly in season 6, but the fact that he becomes a lot more involved in the battling in season 6 is obviously quite a
he becomes a touch more involved.
Let's not
say a lot more. He maybe stabs one walker, perhaps. We'll get back to it. I'm only joking.
Fair enough. Bob is – what happens to Bob is obviously quite shocking, but it's a nice remix of what happens to someone else in the comic books who is well dead in the TV show. He's been dead for over a season now.
And it's the way they do it, the way he wakes up, doesn't he, when he's been captured and he doesn't realize what they're eating. And he's sat again, there, like you said, he's got this real charm. He's sat there talking to Bob while he's eating his leg.
And the thing again, kudos to the TV show to producers, because they do a fantastic job of doing iconic imagery. The look that exact same shot of Bob suddenly realizing his leg's gone, that image is very, very similar in the comics. It's really, really good. Then there's that brutal episode where obviously they finally catch the hunters in the church and they slaughter them. It's a brutal slaughter, but it's again, you have to sort of ask the questions about how you'd feel about it. The whole Slab Town arc with respect to the hospital and Beth and so forth, I think it's an interesting concept, but on the whole, I wasn't too keen on it. I must be honest. I didn't think, even though it's a good, interesting concept, it just felt like it took way too long. it's good that they managed to bring, yes, they managed to introduce Noah, who's an interesting character, very, very, very grounded character. And they managed to get Carol and Daryl involved in an interesting way. But ultimately, it just felt like, you know, that first half season extended a little more than it should have for me. That said, fun enough that they remixed it, right? So there is a reason they go back to the city in the comics. And funny enough, in the comics, it's actually to pick up some extra weapons. Yeah. They pick up a certain character on the way who has finally joins them at Alexandria in the TV show right at the end.
Morgan, yes.
In respect of episode 9, because that's quite an important one. There's a nice little Easter egg here. They go to Noah's hometown, Shirewilter Estates, which is actually a remix of Wiltshire Estates, which is where they stay in the comic books very, very early on before they rock up at the prison. Obviously, the significant thing here is Tyrese. He gets bitten and he dies. Now, the funny thing is, it's a really beautifully produced episode. There's a lot of nice imagery. The episode starts with a funeral, and you think it's Beth's funeral, but actually, when you look at all the visual cues coming back, it's actually Tyrese's funeral, and it's sort of quite a cerebral, poignant exit for the big man. But ultimately, I've got to say, the Tyrese that I like is the crazy berserker that you see in the comics. This gentle giant, just I never got sold in him. He went out nicely, and he was part of some really interesting arcs, not least the Grove, obviously, that we spoke about just now. But ultimately, I wanted Berserker Tyrese, because Berserker Tyrese was insane in the comics, absolutely crazy and insane, and far more of a, you know, you look at who's challenged Rick for leadership. It's always these big muscle guys, the likes of Abraham, the likes of Tyrese, and unfortunately that didn't come across enough. I thought the introduction of Aaron handled really well. Everyone's depressed. Everyone's got serious PTSD. They're really, really desperate. Ross Markin is cast really well as Aaron. I'm sold on him. I like him very much. Rick's being an a-hole by this point, properly, because he doesn't even trust him, and it's like punching him out and tying him up and handcuffs and whatnot as a driving to Alexandria. But I think you can, you know, we can appreciate that Rick by this point very much a survivor and a leader, so you can understand that. When they arrive in Alexandria, one of the things that I love about this is a lot of nice little touches that they've taken that are unique to the TV show. First of all, Carol immediately goes into deception mode. It's hilarious. She describes herself as being clumsy with guns and it's vulnerable housewife. Whatever, Carol. It's
I like that about her, though. I like the fact that she
doesn't trust anyone.
No, and the thing is, it becomes clear, doesn't it? She doesn't even trust herself. She's so afraid by the person that she's become, by the fact she's become a cold-blooded killer.
It's brilliant.
And now she's got a chance, hasn't she, to reinvent herself, to go back to being the housewife that she used to be so proud of being, to be famous, to be known for something other than the fact that she can kill people without batting an eyelid. And now she's known for she's baking cookies, and she's the one everyone goes to when they can't think of what to make because they're running low on supplies. And she's always got a substitute for something. And you're like, you shot a child in the back of the head like a couple of weeks ago.
Now you're making acorn cookies. Like it's nobody's business, you know?
One of my favorite parts, right? Season 13 opens, and you've got like, while Deanna and Reg and Spencer are like depressed because Aiden's been killed, there's Carol, like she's almost doing like a cooking show with the cookies and like the Martha Stewart of Alexandria. She's just, it's just all these little things with her are brilliant. Remix of Jesse, the very different take on the comic and quite a nice one, actually. I think, they definitely prefer TV show Jesse to comic Jesse because, a lot more interesting, character. Enid, funnily enough, totally new character, not in the comics. Remix of Sophia. I have a couple of thoughts of where Enid may end up in the story based on what happens, later on in the comics, but we'll talk about that just now. I really thought Abraham's little berserker moment at the construction site is brilliant and hilarious, and it's just so typically Abraham. He throws up one of his usual Abrahamisms. you know, the, what did he say, mother dick or something to that effect?
Yes.
The, I think it is mother dick. He is the best swearer in the show.
Oh, well. He's the only one allowed to swear properly. No, you'll be disappointed though. I don't think we're going to hear what we want to hear, but we'll go on to that.
Just quickly, a little Easter egg. The episodes 12 to 15, Remember, Forget, Spend, and Try, all like this little homage to a poem that Dale reads all the way back in season 1, episode 4. So he talks about a watch, time. Time is a gift, not that you may remember time. That's one name of the episode, but that you may forget it. That's another one. For a moment, now and then, and not spend all your breath trying to conquer it, conquer. So all those four or five episodes are taken from, you know, sort of a respectful moment to that poem. A little Easter egg for you.
Never say, audience, we don't teach you anything. All right, never again. This is education. Yeah.
The other little things I love what I did here, Reg. So just so you know that they've reversed it in the comics. Reg is not Reg in the comics, and the leader of Alexandria is male and very much not Reg. But Reg in the TV show, very sweet, very likable, which is a far cry from the from Douglas's wife in the comic. I actually think what they do with Deanna is also more interesting than Douglas. Douglas is not as charming as Deanna in the show, which is very cool. What they did with Nicholas was really, really good. They immediately made him like a proper idiot, which, you know, sort of sets up that whole Glenn versus Nicholas thing very nicely. Noah's death is tragic, but, you know, you're invested in it, because the funny thing is with that episode where he dies is, how does it start? It starts with him and Reg talking about, you know, let's teach each other about architecture, and I want to do this for a long time. That should sort of set you up.
The writing's on the wall, isn't it, when you start making long-term plans in a zombie show or film?
And then lastly, I mean, that the season ending, I love the opening sequence, because Morgan has suddenly gone all samurai. He's got this like half Donatello moment, and he just hands it to those wolves' asses. And then just like all sorts of little interesting elements around, you know, Carol being this double agent. You're probably going to say it just now, Stu, but I have a really serious vote for kill, not only of the season, but maybe of the whole series in this particular episode.
Go on.
And once again, it comes from Daryl Dixon, because as Daryl and Aaron are trying to navigate the, you know, they had those two like massive train cars with all the cans in them, which are obviously, and then Daryl gets this ball and chain effect, and he takes off not one, not two, but three zombie heads in one really slick move. Do you remember that?
I don't. I'm going to have to find it, because it does sound good. I don't know whether it's going to beat Daryl squashing a zombie's head in the back of a car.
It looks so cool. It really, really looks so damn cool. And then obviously, you know, as it ends, you have that significant moment with the, you know, Rick sort of clearly unhinged. He's had this big altercation with Pete. There's a horrific accident where Pete kills Reg, and then of course Rick kills Pete, and then of course it's juxtaposed against, there's Morgan. We're about to find out what he's been through. And Morgan's like shocked, because how could Rick do this? How could Rick have gone off the boil so far? And
the key thing is that Rick did it because Deanna told him to. He was holding back, wasn't he? And you can see Deanna, she doesn't want to be that kind of leader, but it's her husband.
They've got to embrace what it is as well, because they've been so sheltered from it. He's different in the comics, right? Pete, I think there's more. Is there a bit more depth to him, though? I think they feels a bit. I remember reading certain elements of that, but who's the kid? I mean, we'll probably go on to it in season 6, but who's the annoying kid?
Well, the annoying kid in.
They've got the young kid and they've got the old one, haven't they?
The younger one, though, I'd say. Oh,
God.
They've only got the one kid in the comic.
Okay.
I'm guessing they decided to introduce the elder kid in the
Carl,
TV show.
Carl.
Yeah.
Teen twilight kind of drama between the three of them.
They almost create a love triangle, don't they, as well?
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's just weird.
What's the face of the girl?
Enid, there's no other girls their age. I get it. But Enid, really?
Yeah.
You know. You may be surprised. This actually might be something that happened.
I'm hoping Enid does have a story, because she's kind of been a bit of a... there was all the talk of her being a spy for the wolves, wasn't there? That was the big thing.
And it did look like it, because she always seemed to be skulking around, didn't she? And the fact that she was sneaking out and going out, and it always looked like she was up to something.
Yeah, it was a bit different. You kept seeing Carl kind of seeing this girl jumping over the fence and, you know, kind of hiding in plain sight and stuff. So, yeah, it was quite different. There's a lot that went into the series, you know, when you kind of break it down into this, really. A lot of kind of storylines and a lot of movement and development. It was less standstill than maybe season four, at least for the first kind of half of season four. I liked this season. I can see why people maybe started to get a little bit frustrated, because I think some of the storylines, you know, I think we waited so long for Sanctuary and then it was over in an episode.
Yeah.
And that was quite surprising, you know, to be honest. I you know, it was a great episode. It was probably the finest opening episode of a series. It was brilliant, but it was quite a shock that it was just over, you know. And you'd taken like half a season to get there, and then it was over in one episode. I remember that being quite a surprise for me. But yeah, other than the Daryl and Bess, and when I like their kind of togetherness, but other than the hospital element, I thought it's a pretty solid season.
But what happens is we find ourselves getting to the big one. We are going to break our record for longest show ever.
What are we pushing now?
It's already been an hour. Now we can finally cover season six. I'm sure a lot of people would say that out of the six seasons, this is their favourite or one of their favourites. It starts off at a really horrible 2 or 3 day period in Alexandria. The group have found out that the simpletons in Alexandria have stored a load of walkers in a quarry, and it looks like there could be tens of thousands of walkers in this fucking quarry, and they're kept in by a couple of semi trucks. It makes me just think, how have these people survived? How have these people not shot each other by accident and fallen downstairs and broken their necks? Because it seems so stupid. But you can clearly see that they were building this up. And when they start talking about how they're going to do it, and we'll let them out and we'll lead them away, you're instantly going, no, it's not going to work. It's not going to work, because it never works. Whenever anyone has a plan, it never works. Or it never works as well as it should do. So they come up with this wonderful idea, don't they, about they're going to lead them away and they'll get them to the highway. And then after a certain point, they'll just carry on walking and they'll take themselves miles away and everything will be fine and dandy. Then we've got another separated group of Daryl, Abraham and Sasha. And they meet Dwight, who claims to be fleeing from the Saviors. We've not heard of the Saviors by this point, have we?
No.
So they find a fuel truck. But they get waylaid by a group of the Saviors who claim their property is now owned by Negan.
And we must say, it's not Zombie Kill of the Week, but it's the best kill in the show for me.
It's probably the best non-zombie kill, where Daryl pops up with a fucking RPG and just blows the smeg out of them. And everything looks like it's kind of tense, and then it starts to calm down, and then there's a fucking RPG and everyone's blown up and everyone's just toasted on the floor like marshmallows. And Daryl's really, really pleased with himself. And why wouldn't you be? He just got to use an RPG.
I would be.
You would be. He took them out. It was pure first-person shooter video game in real life.
It was. It's literally, it was taken from a game and gone, right, what would you do in this situation? Yep, there's a rocket launcher.
It's what you do in Call of Duty.
Exactly.
If you've got a rocket launcher, you walk into a room of people and instead of shooting them, you rocket the shit out of them.
If you ever get a chance in a game to get hold of a rocket launcher or a grenade launcher, you know you are winning.
Yeah.
It's hands down.
Yeah. No one's going to shoot bullets.
You've probably blown yourself up at one point or another. But other than that, you are winning.
You're going out in grenade style, which is the best way to go. And then I'm sort of losing myself in the chronology of how it happens, but the one of the walls collapses, doesn't it, as some of the walkers start forcing their way into Alexandria, which sort of goes back to Diana's
husband.
That's
when they're basically led away because of the car alarm goes off, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I remember that there's a bit right at the end of one of the episodes where a couple of people have been doing a patrol around the fence, and as they walk past one bit, you start to see some blood coming through one of the fences, and you realise that the fence has started to lean just a slight bit, but they haven't noticed it because they've taken their eye off the ball a little bit. And this is one of the things that Diana's husband wanted to do, isn't it? He wanted to put up more fences with more reinforcements because he accepted that what was there wasn't going to last forever. So it's another one of if Pete hadn't gone batshit and tried to kill Rick, maybe they would have been a little bit more fortified and a little bit more secure. But then you end up with this. It starts going quite backwards and forwards, doesn't it? Because all of a sudden, while the group are on the road, all of a sudden there's this massive horn gets...
I think it's a horn at the end of one of the episodes.
They were walking away, and then all of a sudden Rick hears this massive honk, and then
incredible work to build that kind of construction line and herd all those walkers in that direction.
Yeah.
And there's a few walkers that split off, and the groups went and took them out. And Rick was trying to get them ready. Do you know what I mean?
Guided them back to the road, didn't he? So they'd go into the woods and they'd.
Yeah.
It was just herding cattle, wasn't it? They were trying to keep them all in this one massive flock of undead.
Yeah. The biggest herd.
You're talking thousands or tens of thousands all up. And they're trying to get into the highway, aren't they? And Daryl and Abraham and Sasha, the plan is they're going to take them. They try to take them up to a junction, don't they? And then they're going to spin back on themselves or something. But then everyone realizes where the horn is coming from. It's coming back from base, and all the walkers are heading that way. So then everyone goes back, and it turns out that all hell's broken loose. And then we get the introduction of Jesus as well from the nearby hilltop community. And then I thought this was one of the slightly more confusing bits, because they're still dealing with Alexandria, and then they bring in Hilltop, and then they bring in Negan as well. And
I think Marco will kind of testify for this. It's kind of in the comics. It's quite important. But obviously it felt quite rushed in the TV side of things. You've got one new community, then you've got the saviors, and then obviously, you know, moving forward, we're going to have another one. So the kingdom, which they've shown off bits and pieces, you know, you've seen in the trailers, you see Ezekiel with a big white tiger, so you know who he is. But it's very much, you know, you have to be introduced to that colony to know the relationship with the saviors and why they're going to be a certain way towards Rick's group, because they feel like, you know, they're the dominant force, which I think you realize.
I mean, it's a plot point, isn't it? It's a means to an end. If you just introduce Negan in the way that they did without Hilltop, it wouldn't have the same impact, because it doesn't build the grandiosity or the scale of just how big Negan's reach is. You know, he is the daddy in all of this. Like he mentions in his big, wonderful speech about, he says to Rick, you do not mess with the New World Order. And that's what it is, isn't it? He is controlling all the surrounding areas.
He's the king.
Work for me. And I rewatched the F-rated version of his speech, which is like 11 or 12 minutes long. And he must say fuck seriously about 300 times. And he starts saying about, you know, half of your shit, that's mine. If that's not enough, go and steal or find more for yourselves to make up for it. And if you don't like it, tough, I'll kill you. I'll kill anyone who gets in my way. And it's a brilliant, brilliant little rolling speech that he does. And I saw a video with Jeffrey Dean Morgan, and I didn't know that they did that, where he's the one that said they do a normal take for TV. And then he said, we do the fuck take, which is where all the gloves come off. They can swear as much as they want. They can say anything because it's only going out on DVD and Blu-ray. So obviously they're nowhere near as censored. But Marco said before, they do that on, there's been plenty of other scenes that's been done on. But I mean, Marco, I'm sure you will go into this. Yeah. I can't imagine there have been many scenes that have had that much swearing that's been cut as that Negan speech. I'll put a link to it on the Twitter account because it's just harrowing watching it. And the thing is, it doesn't feel like he's swearing for swearing's sake, because when he's swearing, it makes him, it creates more impact with what he's saying. And it just makes him sound like such a dick, but a dick to be feared. Like, you don't think that this guy's just spouting bullshit. He sounds like a homicidal maniac. And you really do think he would gut every single person who stood in front of him if he thought for one second that they weren't going to fall into line.
Well, he'd cave their head in with Lucille, but yeah, either way. I think before we go on to Negan, because he's obviously the big talking point and the major talking point of what it was all building towards, but there's obviously big story points with Carol and Morgan in this series, obviously particular Morgan for me, and that standalone episode of Eastman's, which I think does need to be discussed.
I hated it.
Did you?
I hated it. Because
Marco's going to be like me. I hope Marco loved it because I loved it as well. So.
Did I remember rightly? This was round the time, wasn't it, where Glenn died in inverted commas?
Yeah.
It was in finale. The dumpster scene was probably episode 4, was it? And then Eastman was 5, and then there was something else 6, and then you found out about Glenn.
And I was fuming because I wanted to know. I knew that Glenn wasn't going to have died, but I wanted
to. It's still, he should have died, right? Watching that back.
He
wasn't getting out of that.
It's the only thing I understand the logistics of what's his face, the dickhead guy that he for some reason gave
Nicholas.
Like seven Nicholas that he gave 17 chances to, even though he fucking shot him. I understand the logistics of yes, he hid underneath him, but his face was exposed. And traditionally, whenever there is an exposed body part, the walkers bite. They go for hands,
especially
legs,
a lot
feet, faces, and necks. And there was dozens of them. There is no way in hell that Glenn's face wouldn't have at least been nibbled on gently before he was able to get. It would have been more believable if he was bitten.
Gently, Stu?
Well, you know, in like a kind of semi-erotic way, like, ooh, put a bit of Kenny G on, open a bottle of wine. But it would have been more believable if they didn't kill him there and then, but he got bitten and then escaped and then, you know, found the group, but. Oh, now Maggie's
But Glenn's just, he's never going to die. I think we've realised this.
He's going to die.
Oh.
He's going to die. I have a theory.
Do you think it's going to go down the route of the comics? Do you genuinely think that? I don't think they will.
I will answer that question later.
Yeah,
we haven't got that much later, so we'll come back to it in about 2 minutes. All right, let's talk about Morgan.
So I didn't like the Morgan thing. I understand that they wanted to flesh him out because the only time we'd really seen Morgan was at season 2 or 3.
Yeah.
He was really damaged, wasn't he? He was really shaken up by what had happened. Yeah. And then they had the cracking bits where at the end of every episode, there's this masked figure that seems to be stalking the group and you're not quite sure if it's a good stalking or a bad stalking. And then it turns out that it's Morgan. And then I really didn't like the bullshit hippie pacifist where all of a sudden he won't kill. That's what really pissed me off about him, that he turned
into an absolute person. He is hard to get on board with, this Morgan, you know, because I think the Morgan you know was extremely likable in the first episode.
And he just used to sit there
charming
the walkers for a laugh.
And then that, exactly. So you had that element of him, and obviously he clearly lost his mind, as we know in that episode that we discussed previously. It's a hard Morgan to get on board with. I liked Eastman's character. I liked the story arc, but I didn't like what it's made Morgan become. But I think Morgan's role will still be quite crucial, and I can't do comic spoilers because Marco can't either, but you know, his role as a pacifist is important and in a certain storyline coming up in the next series or two.
Yeah. So it's one of those, isn't it? It's a means to an end. That Because by the time you get to the sixth, the seventh, the eighth season, you can't really have characters who become mainstays who haven't been fleshed out, who haven't got some semblance of a backstory, even if it doesn't go right back to what they were like before, you know, the world caved in on itself, even if it's just an explanation, as they did with Morgan, about why he or she is the way that they are. So Morgan turning up and as a pacifist wouldn't have worked at all if they didn't explain why.
They needed that, you know. Yeah. It's difficult as the episode is if you wanted to know what happened. And I know it was, like I said before, they seem to have the balls to be able to go, we're not going to tell you what happened to this character. I mean, they clearly did when they dropped this kind of bomb at the end of the season. And you've got to wait 6 months for an answer. But, you know, before that, they clearly had, you know, with Glenn's situation to go, right, we're not just going to shelve it for one episode. Is it two or three they went? And it's crazy to think they'd do that because, you know, but Eastman would seem frustrating when you want to know what happened to Glenn. I understand that. So
yeah.
I think what we'll do is we will talk about Negan and we will talk about this series. But I think once we've watched episode one of season seven, I think we should maybe revisit and do just a pod on Negan and a bit more backstory, yeah, once we know a little bit more.
The cast have been talking about this, and Norman Reedus, his latest quote was, the first episode of season seven is going to have the viewers kicking their TVs. And it sounds like they're not pussyfooting around straight away. We will see.
I think you'll see it straight away.
Who, as in within the first minute, we will see who got their head stoved in by Lucille. And I think this is probably going to be there.
It's known in the comics. It's Glenn. So, yeah. Marco... And
that's why everyone thought that Glenn was going to die under the dumpster, didn't they? Because he'd outstayed his welcome, kind of.
And they foreshadowed it even in Sanctuary with the baseball
bat. Yeah, with the baseball bat.
They did.
And also handing a baseball bat as well when he's exploring that place later in season five with Noah. Wheelchair Estates, when he's talking
to
Rick and Michonne. I think, not only do I think Glenn is going to get the bat, but I actually think there may be two characters who get the bat.
That would be bold. Yeah.
Because I just, the only criticism I have of the show right now is when you look at that lineup at the end of season six, they have not had the balls to kill off characters, and they've got to have the balls to kill off characters. I mean, I'm sorry. These TV show guys have got it easy, okay? Abraham is still alive, right? Morgan is still alive, right? Daryl Dixon exists. I mean, come on. This has not happened in the comic. In the comic, it is desperate. Rick is like, oh, crap, I've got like a sniper and my kid, and that's it. Like, it's just versus Negan. It's still a fair fight here. They've got to have the guts to kill people off.
So go on, then. I'm going to make you put your balls on the line now.
Glenn and Daryl.
Right, okay, mine's Abraham and Glenn. I've been saying since that episode, I think Abraham, because he's been so fucked up for so long, and then he finally finds happiness with Sasha. They finally tell each other, don't they, that they like each other, and he finally starts to be happy. And as soon as you get happy, you are fucking dead.
Mine was solely Abraham. Okay, so, but if we are thinking two, I think they'll go for the gentleman that introduced them to the place they're in. I can't remember his name.
Aaron.
Yes. Aaron. Only because I think you care a little bit about him, but
he seems like a nice guy. He seems like one of those. He's treading the line quite well between being harsh enough to survive.
Is Negan's philosophy not to kill women, Marco?
Well, this is the only thing that disappoints me about what they did with the final episode is that, yes, fair enough, it's a very tense episode, and particularly if you've read the comic, like I was watching that episode dreading it, and you know I was sitting there looking at tweets of people saying, "Ooh, it's coming, this is getting interesting," and like, you guys have no idea. In the comic book, this sequence is like five, six pages. It is
is chilling. And I mean, it's not even the most shocking moment. I still think the governor's attempted rape of Michonne way earlier in the comic books, comics is far more freakish. But this moment in the comics is horrible. Because the thing is, Charlie Adlard, who illustrates this stuff, he goes into detail. I'll be shocked if they actually show the detail here. But it is a gruesome
image. It's known that the blood dripping and the severity of it.
Well, have you seen the latest trailer? The latest trailer, the camera pans down and you can see there's a puddle on the floor and it's blood and you can see bits of brain in it.
Oh,
will they go that far?
I think they've got to.
They've killed a child, but they didn't show that. You know, they didn't kill off the baby. Thank Christ, because that would have,
But they have killed off some kids.
The Laurie scene with the bloody C-section was pretty harrowing. You know,
yeah.
They've gone quite bold, I just don't think if they're gonna cut out all the swearing, do you think they'll show it?
Do you think they'll show
the bat to the head?
Look, they might. But the one thing I was gonna say, sorry, Rory, I didn't actually ask you to answer your question. Basically, was Does he not kill women? Not necessarily, but he kind of like, there's this whole speech that he doesn't go into in the TV show where he actually goes to the different characters and says like, I can't really take you out because, you know, race card, and he's pointing at Michonne. Can't take you out because also race card, he's pointing at Glenn. Can't really take out mother and child. Not really cool. That's not what I do. Can't take out Rick because, you know, it makes you a martyr, blah, blah, blah. It's like he does all this whole like speech of rationalization around why he shouldn't. And that's why he ends up saying he can't decide. And then he starts playing eeny, meeny, miny, mo. By the way, just the profanity. Negan swears a lot in the comic. It's insane. I just counted. He says the F word 37 times in that particular speech. When you consider this is over like 3 or 4 pages, that's a lot.
That's a lot of thoughts. I haven't read this one yet, but I really want to. I'm going to try and get the second compendium read before it starts.
He is without. I mean, the second he's introduced, it is he steals every page he's on. Yeah. He is the thing that's amazing about him is just he's got this charisma and he's also smart. This is not like the governor who has charisma but isn't a good tactician. This guy knows what he's doing. He's brutal. He's well versed. He understands exactly how. Like it's just. It's a fascinating arc, and I'm gonna like march over to the States and like I don't know pummel Gimple with Lucille myself if he gets the season wrong, because this season
I don't think they'll get it wrong. I think they've been waiting to do this. I think everyone knows Negan's power in the comics, and they will have to do other things. I think like we talked about the Kingdom, and they can't just fully focus on this, because you know this show doesn't just focus on one aspect of things. Yeah. So, you know, there are going to be other developments and things are going to have to settle down before, you know, the war rages. But yeah, it's got the potential to be, you know, when do we think it'll end? Do we think 2 more seasons?
I thought it had been confirmed that it was going to be 8.
Yeah. So like, 7 and 8.
I'm sure somebody somewhere, unless I'm still thinking.
Are you thinking of Game of Thrones? Yeah, I think you're thinking Game of Thrones. I don't think they've gone that way with it yet. Obviously the comics are still going, so there's material to be used. But I just think it needs to go up a level. I think it needs to go up a level. I think it's such a successful thing, but I just think it can offer a little bit more. Like I said, I think Negan is almost a pod in itself. Let's be honest.
I think that's a really good idea. We'll do that after the first episode, and we're all caught up. We can just do a quick, even if it's only a quick half hour, where all we talk about.
If Marco
is
talks, it'll be at least 45 minutes. So let's just remember. Maybe, this is your mastermind chosen subject, Marco. I'm impressed.
I love this character. I really, really love this character. Negan for me is the second best character in The Walking Dead in the whole thing. Only surpassed by the walkers themselves, because obviously the walkers define the universe. But Negan for me is just because the thing, the most powerful thing about him is also what he brings out in Rick. Because it's at this point when you start seeing some really interesting character development with Rick in the comics. And it's much needed as well, because I think if you look at season six as a whole, the pacing is a bit sluggish in the beginning, even though there's a lot of tension with that, that big herd. But there's a lot of charm that happens, sort of in the lead up to it. They have to introduce the hilltop, and they have to introduce this larger world, because that's critical to the idea of, you know, setting up the barter system and all these different communities that ultimately Negan is controlling. Just quickly, the next world, that episode, love it. My favorite Walking Dead episode ever. It's the one where Jesus is introduced, because it's so funny. There's a lot of charm in that episode.
It is quite a funny one. He's a bit of a trickster, isn't he? He's got quite a cheeky, trustworthy face.
I think you want to see more of him, don't you? He's a good character, and he's known well in the comics.
And he's a big one going forward. Is he part of Kingdom?
No, he's part of
Yeah. I'm thinking of the guy with the tigers.
Oh no, yeah. that's Ezekiel. You'll get used to him. I think let's wrap, otherwise it'll keep going and going and going and going. And Nina will basically never edit one of these again. So
cool.
Yeah.
Let's do Eddie plugs. Marco, you are the guest. Anything from you, mate?
Not really, because I mean the AI Pod 126 that I did, if you want to listen to it, by all means,
good.
Kalen's gonna record one in a couple of days. So I think in fairness,
yeah, he's gonna record one hopefully after we've beaten United, yes.
Yeah, hopefully. Absolutely, hopefully. Cool. Other than that, there's this one, which is about The Walking Dead and the comic pod. Listen to more comic pods and read Rory's amazing thing about DC versus Marvel. And please go watch the new Rogue One trailer. I know that's not an AI plug, but whatever.
Ah, screw it. he's just plugged my article, so I don't have to do it. So that's fine. If anyone did want to read it and has got to this point of this podcast and not fallen asleep or switched off, I spent a lot of time writing this. As these two guys know, and yeah, I'm quite proud of it. It's a good piece, if you ask me, and it's just my first into this style of things, you know, past reviews and other things, so it's good.
Yeah, it is not just saying that because Rory, you know, threatens me with, because he's got some awful, awful photos of me that he got with a tele-zoom lens, but it's he's done a really good article. He's been working on it for approximately two and a half years, and it's Marvel versus DC in cinema. A story of the tortoise versus the hare. Joey Connors has been turfing out on average about two or three articles a week.
He's the same Maguire of the comic pod.
Yeah, basically. But there's a lot less like charts and stuff and graphs. that's not a dig. I like charts and graphs. I love Excel.
Joey, you went charts and graphs.
Yeah. That's another t-shirt. Yeah. Hashtag charts and graphs. We're going to make a fortune for the marketing department, you know, when AI gets a marketing department. We've also had articles up about Captain Marvel, Luke Cage. He and I did sort of companion articles. I did one about the history of the Flash, and then he did one about explaining the Speed Force, which is what gives the Flash their powers. We've got Black Panther. We've got Harley Quinn, Green Arrow versus Hawkeye. We've got dozens of articles up there now, which is brilliant. We promised that we would get these out, and they're finally starting to come in. We're trying to get one or two articles up every week. So if you can go and read them, please do. You can find them all on the New Anfield Index site. The comics page is under the geek section.
Oh, the comics, it looks amazing. It does. Incredible.
It looks brilliant because we've got so much content on there. Now, it looked a little bit barren at first, but now we've got so many articles. We've got versus articles where Joey's comparing Hero A against Hero B. We've got backstories about films that are upcoming. We've got just general pieces. I'm going to try and work on a Green Lantern piece, because I constantly say that Green Lantern is my favorite hero. But that's going to be quite a big one, because there's a lot of shit to write about. We know we're never going to get, you know, thousands of people reading them, but thank you to everyone that does take the time to read them. We do it because we love it. We like writing about these things because we love them. We care about them. And if, you know, a couple of dozen people read them, that's great. But obviously, the more people that read them, the better. Share them around if you think, you know, anyone that might be interested.
Yeah, always.
And as always, we love getting suggestions about things that you'd like to hear, because we've got a list as long as our legs about what we would like to do. But if there's anything that you want to hear, please let us know if there's previews for TV shows or certainly any films that are coming up. We'll be doing previews for Doctor Strange, hopefully very soon, because it's out in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
I've already got my tickets booked for that. Gallery, of course. Unlimited popcorn nachos.
Come on, man. Wrap this. It's going on. 10 minutes of wrap.
It's fine. I wanted to hit an hour and 30, and we've done that now.
They're going to kill us, man. We're never going to be back again.
It's fine. So
it's been great while it lasted 25. We made it to 25.
We didn't quite get to 100, but never mind. Fuck it. Yeah, so...
On that note.
See you later.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult, and that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best, the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult, and that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best, the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.